The terrorist attacks in Paris Friday are stirring fresh debate about American policy toward ISIS, and it's likely to elevate the importance of national security in next year's presidential and congressional elections. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. A spirited battle is expected for the Pennsylvania U.S. Senate seat now held by Republican Pat Toomey. WHYY's Dave Davies asked each of the announced candidates what they think the U.S. should do about ISIS.
At a news conference in Turkey, President Obama said he's sticking with his approach of targeted airstrikes and military training and assistance to those fighting ISIS. He said he knows it will take time and that he will have critics. He said he's open to new strategies if there's a reason to think they'll actually work.
But what we do not do, what I do not do, is to take actions either because it is going to work politically or it is going to somehow, in the abstract, make America look tough or make me look tough.
So what do Pennsylvania's candidates for U.S. Senate have to say? The first Democrat in the race, former Congressman and former Navy Admiral Joe Sestak, says a change in strategy is vital. He says a fundamental problem is that the U.S. has been thinking of ISIS as a terrorist organization when it's really more than that.
It is actually a state, a wannabe, very dangerous state, owning wide swaths of territory. If we don't change our strategy, bringing other states together in order to go after the infrastructure that gives it $2 billion in assets, we will have the wrong military and diplomatic approach.
Specifically, Sestak says, America should attack ISIS oil fields and refineries and its headquarters, where leaders plan strategy and administer the territory they control. President Obama notes that ISIS is embedded among a civilian population, making air attacks problematic. Sestak says sophisticated military technology is up to the task.
We are going to have to do it very precisely. Now, that may mean that lasers that are much more precise than that Russia is using with its bombing might be necessary to be done.
Also in the race is former Pennsylvania Environmental Secretary Katie McGinty. She says the attacks show ISIS has a broader reach than we realized and that a thorough review of its capabilities and how to contain them are in order. She's particularly troubled by reports that ISIS operatives' use of encryption technology could undermine law enforcement efforts to penetrate their operations and thwart future attacks.
I think the cyber piece of this, the communications piece of this that enables and supports terror, tells us that there is more that we need to do with that piece of this whole terrible equation.
John Fetterman, the mayor of Tiny Braddock in western Pennsylvania, who recently entered the race, says the attacks are tragic, but don't necessarily signal the need for a radical change in American policy.
I think the way the president is going at it is sound and targeted attacks and dismantling ISIS's leadership. I don't think we should have a collective freak out and decide to invade another country and spend $1 trillion and not even address the issue head on.
Fetterman's mention of invading another country was a clear reference to the 2003 invasion of Iraq. He and Sestak noted that incumbent Republican Senator Pat Toomey voted to support military action in Iraq when he was in Congress. Toomey was unavailable for an interview on ISIS. He released a statement saying in part that the civilized people of the world are under siege by radical Islamic barbarians, and we must redouble our efforts to win this war on terrorism. Dave Davies, WHYY News.
State Senator Anthony Williams is calling on Pennsylvania Supreme Court Justice Michael Akin and other officials to resign for their roles in the Porngate email scandal. WHYY's Katie Culinary reports that Williams showed a group of community and religious leaders a small selection of the emails traded among lawyers and judges.
Among them was a video of a black woman who regrets voting for President Obama.
New job. Well, you mean I'm not going to get my government check?
And an audio clip called Ned Calls the Gay and Lesbian Channel.
I mean, look, we all know gay men are very promiscuous.
What are you?
Everybody's ready? Okay.
At a press conference, Williams condemned the emails as riddled with hate speech.
What has been described as Porngate should be described as Hategate.
Williams wants Aiken to resign, as well as what he called branches of the tree. That includes two state officials who declined to discipline Aiken and a member of the Judicial Conduct Board who reviewed the emails and was also a recipient. It also includes three former state prosecutors who now work for Philadelphia District Attorney Seth Williams.
I think he should have fired them a long time ago. Many of us have said as much. And I want you to be very clear, I'm friendly with Seth Williams. He's a friend of mine. So I'm not going to criticize my friend.
Senator Williams also wants State Attorney General Kathleen Kane to appoint a special prosecutor to investigate the scandal, despite the fact Kane is facing criminal charges and has had her law license suspended. Katie Colinari, WHYY News.
Since 1997, the Keystone Research Center has worked to shed light on strategies to achieve a more prosperous and equitable Pennsylvania economy. The KRC's Pennsylvania Budget and Policy Center has since 2007 attempted to demystify state tax and budget policies. Joining me in his newly named capacity as director of those demystifying efforts, Mount Airy writer, activist, and former Philadelphia City Council candidate Mark Steer. Mark, welcome back to NewsWorks tonight, and congratulations.
Thanks very much, Dave. Happy to be here.
You are certainly joining at a very important time as we're now in what's hopefully the final stages of crafting together a Pennsylvania budget. Have you had time to study the preliminary proposals?
Yes. It's a compromise. There's things to like. There's a lot of things not to like.
What are the major flags?
Well, I think the thing that we're happiest about is that there's restored education funding. $350 million, I think, is the number for education, $50 million for special education.
Though that in itself is a compromise. The governor wanted $1 billion right off the bat.
That's right. It's a down payment on what we really need in the state. It doesn't really close the gap that was created by the Corbett budget cuts.
But how about the taxes designed to help generate that revenue?
That's where I think there's a real issue. The governor proposed a mixture of a personal income tax increase and a sales tax increase. What we've gotten, it seems, and a severance tax on natural gas drilling, which is really critically important.
But apparently that severance tax won't be part of the final package.
Severance tax is not included in the package, it seems. No personal income tax increase and a fairly substantial increase in the sales tax. And we're really concerned about that because the sales tax, as I think most people know, falls far heavier on lower income people than it does on wealthier people.
So what efforts will be made to offset the onerous effect on the working class and the poor?
Part of the package is that the sale tax increase doesn't just go to education funding. It also goes to something that Democrats and Republicans agree with, which is property tax rebates. And the question is, how are those property tax rebates going to be distributed? It can be done in a way that's geographically equitable. It can be done in a way that mostly benefits rich suburbs and vacation homes in the Poconos.
So what specifically does the Policy Center do to help shape the discourse?
Well, what we're doing right now is we're trying to make legislators and also the public aware of really what really is at stake here. We've put out papers about who pays the sales tax, trying to make clear that if you're in the lowest 20% of incomes, about 5% of your income goes to the sales tax right now. If you're in the top 20%, less than 2.3% of your income goes to the sales tax. So that's one thing we're doing. The other thing we're doing is we're trying to point out that there are a lot of options for how to distribute property tax relief. And we're encouraging legislators, actually on both sides of the aisle, because this is an interesting case where Democrats concerned about equity and Republicans concerned about geographic fairness should be supporting a much better way of doing property tax relief than the Republican leadership put forward when they passed a bill on this last May.
Longtime Temple professor, apparently on sabbatical the last year, where you didn't kick back. You wrote not one but two books. What then compelled you to take on this job?
Well, over the last 15 years of my life, I've gone back and forth between research and writing and advocacy. And what's really wonderful about this job is that it's kind of at the cusp of those two things. Give me a chance to do some policy research that's oriented towards contemporary public policy issues and contemporary debates in our state and to some extent our cities. And on the other hand, it gives me a chance to do some advocacy, working with people in the progressive community and helping – and legislators who see things our way, helping them, give them the arguments and the policy options that will enable them to push the state in the right direction.
Mark Steer, I have no doubt you're going to hit the ground running. Congratulations, and thanks for joining us again on NewsWorks tonight.
Thanks very much. Happy to be here, Dave.
Mark Steer is the newly named director of the Pennsylvania Budget and Policy Center starting December 1st. And you can hear more of our conversation at newsworks.org. Turning to this evening's headlines, the governors of Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware have ordered flags to fly at half staff in keeping with the president's order to honor those who died in the Paris attacks. The state flags will remain lowered until Thursday. Meanwhile, Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf says his administration will continue working with the federal government to resettle Syrian refugees in Pennsylvania following the attacks. Wolf, a Democrat, said today that the federal government believes it can handle an additional 10,000 refugees that the White House said in September it would accept from Syria. Eight governors, all Republicans, say they're opposing efforts to relocate Syrian refugees in their states, or they're demanding to know more about the federal government's security procedures to screen Syrian refugees. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie says he would veto legislation establishing a state driver's license for residents who cannot prove they are in the United States legally. Christie called the idea dangerous today, as hundreds of marchers in Trenton called for lawmakers to support the measure, which was under discussion by the Assembly Homeland Security Committee today. Clear skies, 58 degrees at 6:17. Ahead at 6:30 this evening, Marketplace examines how ISIS funds its attacks, and William McCants from the Brookings Institute weighs in on how ISIS has become one of the world's most powerful terrorist groups in modern history. This evening's forecast, clear skies, low 43 degrees. Still ahead, Delaware residents bid in the tens of thousands of dollars on items that have little or no value to the other 49 states, license plates.
If you have a low-digit plate and you need some cash, sell off your license plate. I'm sure people in other states wish they could do that.
Find out why Delawareans are paying as much for a plate as they would for a Mercedes as NewsWorks Tonight continues.
The University of Delaware MBA supports WHYY. The UD part-time MBA program offers busy professionals the opportunity to pursue their education and their careers. With flexible online and on-campus options and a variety of specializations, the program can be structured to meet both busy schedules and help with career advancement. Their next drop-in information session will be held on Wednesday, November 18th from 4:30 to 7 p.m. Learn more at udmba.com. The University of Delaware MBA. It is all about you.
Abington Hospital Jefferson Health supports WHYY. Abington Hospital has been recognized as a fully accredited chest pain center by the Society of Cardiovascular Patient Care. The specialized physicians at their Heart and Vascular Institute help patients who arrive with symptoms of a heart attack, quickly evaluating patients experiencing these symptoms and offering the best available treatment options. If you have chest pain, their team is dedicated to helping you continue to enjoy life. Learn more at jefferson.edu/abington.
Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. The number of dwarf planets in our solar system exceeds the population of planets closer in than Pluto. Let's take inventory with Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. Derek, eight planets within Pluto. What's the count outside?
Well, the number is now up to 10. So there's a lot of stuff out there in that region beyond Neptune. And in many ways, Dave, we probably ought to sort of reorient ourselves in terms of where the solar system, you know, the formal solar system ends and the rest of the quote-unquote outer solar system begins.
And so on this clear sky night, let's talk about the Oort cloud.
So the Oort cloud, something that's not going to cause us any difficulty because this is a cloud of material, a sphere of material that actually encapsulates the entire solar system. It goes from about 50 times the distance of Earth to Sun to about 100,000 times the distance between Earth and Sun.
That's how large our solar system is?
Yeah, right around 100,000 what are called astronomical units out. It's the place where we come to sort of like the physical boundary, if you will, more like the cosmographical boundary, you could call it. And it's also the furthest extent of the sun's gravitational reach. And right now, if we look at the inner portion of the Oort cloud, we're finding more objects that are similar to what we find in our formal solar system, although much, much smaller. Objects that are Pluto-sized, maybe a little bit bigger than Pluto, and a little bit smaller than Pluto, down to about a third the size of Pluto. Maybe we'll find more of those. But if you go out to the outer regions of the Oort cloud, what you find are icy, rocky bodies that actually are the origination point for comets in the solar system.
So what do we know about this latest object discovered?
Well, actually not very much. The newest one is called V774-104. It's less than half of Pluto's size, but it's 2 to 3 times the distance to Pluto, and that makes it about 9.5 billion miles out from the central portion of our solar system.
Remind us the prevailing definition of a planet versus a planetesimal.
Well, a planet is an object that is massive enough to pull itself into a sphere, orbits around the sun, and has enough mass to clear its path of other objects. Now, planetesimals, or these so-called dwarf planets as we refer to them, are objects that supposedly wouldn't fit inside that category. So what we're finding is that some of them do have moons, so they're massive enough to have moons. Maybe they haven't cleared their orbits, or their orbits are eccentric in some way or another, but still they orbit around the sun.
So where does Pluto fall down on the mark?
Yeah, well, Pluto falls definitely into the category of dwarf planets. There's no question about that.
It has 2 moons.
It does have 2 moons, and it has cleared its orbit of most of the other debris that's there, and it has pulled itself into a spherical shape. However, UCLA professor Jean-Luc Margot now is suggesting a simpler mathematical way to classify what makes a planet a planet. And his plan is to use the estimates of the star's mass, estimates of the planet's mass, and its orbital period to calculate that critical mass needed to clear the orbit of all the other stuff. And if we go by that definition, the way it turns out is, unfortunately, Pluto still remains a dwarf planet.
Because of its smaller mass?
Because of its smaller mass. However, if we look at some other objects in our solar system, most notably our moon, it turns out that our moon does fit into that classification that would then make it a planet. So there's a lot of work that has to be done to get a much more accurate definition of what a planet is, and maybe this new suggestion by Jean-Luc Margot is something that can be used much more objectively, especially in application to objects found orbiting other stars.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight.
You find Earth boring, just the same old, same thing. Come on, sign up without a space, ways incorporated.
In Delaware, some license plates are worth more than the cars that carry them, as WHYY's Mark Eichmann explains.
45,000 have been 45,000 and 45 have been 40,000.
It's a rainy fall Sunday afternoon here at the Rehoboth Beach Convention Center. Inside, a crowd of several dozen look on as multiple bidders vie for Delaware tag number 147.
147 is a tag that should bring somewhere in maybe the low 40s. Most three-digit tags are $30,000 to $45,000 now.
That's Butch Emmert, the president of Emmert Auctions. And you heard right, $45,000 for a license plate. In Delaware, the lower the tag number, the higher the price and status.
Seeing a single-digit license plate in Delaware is the equivalent of seeing a unicorn, really.
Todd Chappelle is a Delaware songwriter and comedian.
I've seen a single-digit plate. Number 9, I know you're out there.
He says for some, it's an investment.
It's just an interesting phenomenon that's unique to the state of Delaware. These low-number plates that people can trade and sell. And, you know, if you have a low-digit plate and you need some cash, sell off your license plate. I'm sure people in other states wish they could do that.
Kind of a Delaware thing. There's really only 2 or 3 states that trade them at the level that we do. About 7 years ago, we sold number 6 for $675 plus the buyer's premium, so over $700,000.
The obsession began when tags changed to blue and gold from black and white in the early 1960s. Retired Delaware State Archivist Russ McCabe says the tags carry plenty of sentimental value, too.
As people hung on to those, you know, they became family heirlooms.
You know, if that's Dad's tag, I want it, and I'm going to put it on my new car. And suddenly, they weren't just family heirlooms, they were collectibles.
The governor gets number one. The lieutenant governor and secretary of state cruise around in two and three. And from there, it's game on.
We've seen people mortgage their houses to buy tags. We have seen people, you know, that inner family squabbles. You see it all, you know. It becomes a very personal thing. Fair warning! Sold them your way, number 251, for $39,500. There's a bargain.
It's an adrenaline rush, especially when it's somebody else's money.
Anthony Latina submitted the winning bid for tag number 147. He was bidding on behalf of a friend.
I knew a friend of mine had been shopping for low-digit tags, so I called him, said I would be down in Sussex County today, probably attend the auction. Would you like me to bid on the tag for him? And he said, sure, let's go for it. And sure enough, we got it.
With fewer than 1 million people in Delaware, owning a single, double, or even triple-digit tag bestows a status here not seen in many other places.
Up to $80,000. Worth what you'll pay for it here tonight. Little piece of Delaware history.
Strange and unique, typically Delaware.
From the Delaware Desk, I'm Mark Eichmann, WHYY News.
Learn more about what makes Delaware tick tonight on WHYY-TV's First Extra, Delaware Part 2. A fun, quirky look at the first date. Delaware Part 2 airs this evening at 9 on WHYY-TV. Finally, one of Philadelphia's premier restaurateurs is cashing in. Mark Vetri and his front-of-house partner Jeffrey Benjamin will sell their restaurant group to Urban Outfitters. The Vetri family, including Osteria, Ami, Alaspina, Los Piedos, and Pizzeria Vetri, will be sold to the retail lifestyle giant based at the Philadelphia Navy Yard by the end of the year. Vetri's first venture, the boutique Italian restaurant called Vetri, will not be part of the sale. Vetri family will become a subsidiary of Urban Outfitters, or Urban, joining other retail brands Anthropologie, Terrain, and Free People. Aside from in-store cafes, this will be Urban's only restaurant venture. Vetri family has a long relationship with Urban, using its Navy Yard cafeteria for its Great Chefs charitable event, and Urban contributing with the Vetri family nonprofit foundation. Vetri and Benjamin will remain in charge of the restaurants, saying they'll be able to take advantage of Urban's capital and design resources. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.
The Barbara Brodsky Suites at Lankenau Medical Center support WHYY. Complementing Lankenau Medical Center's commitment to quality patient care, the suites are designed with their patients' privacy and well-being in mind. Each suite features private living and dining areas, personalized amenities, and concierge services. Designed to be warm and inviting, the Barbara Brodsky Suites provide a novel option in private hospital accommodations. To take a virtual tour, mainlinehealth.org/Brodsky.
Virtua proudly supports WHYY. This is the time of year to sign up for health insurance. When choosing a health insurance plan, it's important to know whether your doctor or hospital is included. If you want to use a Virtua physician, hospital, or outpatient service, you can find out if Virtua is in the plan you're considering by calling 888-VIRTUA-3. That's 888-VIRTUA-3. Virtua proudly supports WHYY.
New Jersey's Clean Energy Program proudly supports WHYY. New Jersey's Clean Energy Program, incentivizing businesses, local governments, schools, and residents to integrate energy-efficient and renewable technologies into their new construction projects, existing building upgrades, and new equipment installation. More information about modernizing in your home and business with support from New Jersey's Clean Energy Program at njcleanenergy.com/WHYY.